Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for December 10th, 2007, and on this episode we have an interview with Heidi Kettenring. She will be talking to Tom Williams about her roles in Little Women and, of course, Wicked. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest this week is Heidi Kettenring, who is the star of the musical version of Little Women, based on the 1869 book by Louisa May Alcott. Heidi, tell us about that.
The book spans, 10 years or so, and they had to sort of move things around a little bit to fit it within a few years, to fit within the confines of the show. But most of the things that are in the book that people want to see are in there.
So it's about the family up in New England where the father is away as a chaplain in the Civil War.
Correct. The very beginning of the play, Jo is in New York, which she moves to New York at one point so that she can work on her writing, and instantly flashes back to her at home in Concord, Massachusetts, with her family during the war while her father is away, and then sort of moves forward in time from there.
So you play Jo, correct?
I do.
Yeah, and she's kind of the liberated woman of the 19th century.
She is indeed. The first scene of the show, I'm frolicking around in a pair of pants, which was very unusual for girls at the time. So, she was a very outspoken, perky, strong-minded woman for her time.
Yes, and she has how many sisters?
There are four of them. She has three sisters.
Okay, so who are some of the people playing with you as the sisters?
Well, the sisters, Meg is the eldest. That's portrayed by Abby Mueller.
Okay.
And Beth is, and then Jo, and then Beth is played by Dara Cameron.
Okay.
And Amy is played by Morgan Weed.
Okay, and there's your mother and...
Yes,
and then there's
my mother is portrayed by Paula Scrofano.
Paula, okay.
Yeah.
And is an aunt or another older character?
There is. There's Aunt March is portrayed by Ann Whitney.
Wow, Ann Whitney.
Yes, it's actually a really, really nice. One of my very first professional shows that I ever did. I worked down at the Wagon Wheel 10 years ago, and I did a play with Ann Whitney. So it's wonderful to get to do some of these scenes with her, because one of my favorite memories of theater was doing this play with Anne many years ago. So,
and so tell us a little bit more now. So you're going back to the time when Jo is trying to find her place in the world, right?
Yes, she's trying to find her place. She wants to be a writer and is struggling. She's trying to sell her stories, and it's not going very well
because women weren't accepted as writers in that era, if I remember.
Yeah, not so much. Yeah. And more for Jo, she hasn't really found her style yet. I mean, when the play begins, her writing is very lush and wild. She basically writes operatic tragedies, and there's what she calls them blood and guts stories. She writes these blood and gut stories with sword fighting and the moors and wolves and princes.
Don't we see some of that in the play? Isn't it? Isn't in this production? Do they?
Yes,
do
they
someone
do.
Else
the,
to play
the beginning
within a play?
Of Act Two is actually Jo telling one of her stories to the professor and Mrs. Kirk, the owner of the boarding house. And as she's telling the story, it comes to life all around her, and the characters in her book are basically cast by her family members. So in her mind, as she's telling the story, the the evil villain is played by the man who has married her sister, and the princess is one of her sisters, and such. But so it really takes, it takes the journey of the play for Jo to figure out that her writing really, she is at her best when she is with her family, when she thinks of her family. So ultimately, digging deep into herself and into her past and into her family is ultimately what makes her a great writer, as opposed to creating these outlandish tales. Because that's more, it's more that when she's trying to sell her stories, they, the publishers find what she writes inappropriate for their readers, with all of the blood and guts and fact that all of that's written by a woman.
Yes. So eventually she finds her voice by really writing her own story.
Correct.
Yeah. And I thought the musical score and the lyrics were terrific. It's a very underrated score.
I agree. It's so beautiful. It's so wonderful to sing. And we got to have our first rehearsal with the orchestra yesterday, and ultimately our first preview. And oh, hearing these songs with all of the orchestrations, and they're just beautiful.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear it. And so it sounds like you're having a good time.
I'm having a great time. I really am. It's a wonderful group of people. That on top of the fact that we're doing this show that is very heartwarming and hopeful and moving, it's really been a magical time. We're having a great time.
Wow, that is so good to hear. And kudos to Marriott for picking this play, because this is one that when I saw the tour going through, I said, this is such an underrated show.
I agree. I was fortunate enough to see it on Broadway when it was there. A friend of mine was in the company, and I got to see it, I believe it was like 3 or 4 days before they closed, and I just loved it. And I was so sad to hear that they were closing, because I thought that they could have lasted a little longer.
Well, you know, some shows like this, I think, might be better for regional theater.
Well, I do think that is part of the thing with this show. When I saw it, it is such an intimate show. Being on such a vast stage might have hurt it a little bit. I think that the intimacy of the Marriott's space and the fact that it's in the round and no, you know, I think there's only like 8 or 9 rows. Nobody sits too far away. I think that really helps the piece. Just sort of bring it to the intimacy that it really warrants.
Yeah, and it not only has the warmth, but there's a lot of romance in it. So it's not necessarily just a women's show up by any means.
Oh no, there's romance. There's fighting. There's sword fighting. It's got it all.
Yeah, we're very much looking forward to it, and but let's talk a little bit about your background now.
Sure,
you're another of those Northwestern graduates. You guys are everywhere.
Well, you know what we are, and there are a ton of them in this show.
That's true.
I want to say 75% of the cast of Little Women are Northwestern graduates.
Yeah, it starts out with Paul and John are Northwestern graduates.
Exactly, and Ann Whitney. Yep, and myself, and Dara, and Morgan, and Jared. It's just, and forgive me, anyone who I'm leaving out, but there are a number of us.
Yeah, it's terrific. But so, tell us your background. Now, I know you were raised in Nashville, if I remember. You telling
Correct.
Me.
Yeah, I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, and all of my family was born and raised in New Orleans. And when I was 2, my dad got a job in Nashville, so we moved to Nashville, and I grew up there, and then my brother ultimately went down to school in New Orleans, and after my mom passed away, my dad moved back to New Orleans, so New Orleans is currently sort of home.
Okay. What got you to Northwestern?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I don't really remember. When I was in high school, I want to say it was my freshman year, we had this, it was called a spring interim program, where it was 2 weeks where you took sort of different kind of classes that had nothing to do with your typical curriculum at school, and every time they did it, I took one of the theater courses, And this particular year, I think it was my freshman or sophomore year, we took a trip to Chicago for 3 days for a theater trip. And one of the things that we did was visit Northwestern. So that sort of put Northwestern in my brain as a school. And it was my most difficult to get into option when I applied. So in my brain, I thought, well, I'll never get in there. And I did. So I came to Northwestern, but I actually wasn't a theater major. I started as a radio, television, film major and switched into the theater department.
Oh, what got you to make that switch?
I realized it was sort of a mistake. I think that I was trying to... My dad worked in television, and I always liked that, and for a while thought that I maybe wanted to get into reporting, and realized pretty quickly that that just wasn't for me. And I met a lot of theater majors, and I think I was afraid that I wasn't good enough or wouldn't succeed as an actor, so that I needed something a little more stable. And about 2 months into school, I realized that that was not indeed what I wanted to do. So I switched into the theater department.
Well, we're certainly have seen the benefits of that. And tell us about your singing, because I remember reading a story about you that said that you took some singing lessons when you were younger, and the teacher... Tell us that story, because I thought it was a cute story.
Yeah, I started taking voice lessons when I was either in the eighth grade or freshman year in high school, and she was classically trained, and I definitely did not have a classically trained voice in the eighth grade. I was sort of, I should have been, you know, in Annie. I had one of those big, big belty voices, and she tried very hard to get me to sing opera, and it just didn't, we didn't quite mesh, not because I don't like opera, but I simply at the time could not. So that didn't last very long, that marriage of student and teacher. But ultimately in college, I was paired up with a wonderful voice teacher, Kurt Hansen, who kind of helped me marry all of the different aspects of my voice. So,
because you do have a terrific range.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, you can go from the sweet lullabies to belting a Broadway show tune when you need to.
Thank you. I do owe a lot of that to Kurt. He really helped me figure out how to maneuver the breaks in my voice and figure out how to finesse them and find my strengths and my weaknesses. And
well, it certainly shows in the variety of shows you've done. So all right, so now you're at Northwestern.
Yes.
Give us some of the shows you did there, because I'll tell you, when I go see Northwestern Musical Theater, many times their shows are as good as the tours that come through Chicago.
Oh yeah, they do wonderful stuff. I honestly, a lot of the stuff that I did, there's a lot of sort of student-run production companies all over campus, and I did a lot of those, a lot of the smaller student-run stuff. But I did on the town, my sophomore year it was supposed to be the WAMU show, but that year the WAMU show didn't quite happen. There wasn't enough stuff written, and it was sort of a transition year. It was when Tom Rowland was leaving. So we did On the Town, which was so much fun.
Yeah, that is a good show.
Yeah, and then the following year I did the WAMU show, which was Dominic Massimi's first year directing the WAMU show, and we had a blast. And it was a really great cast. There are a lot of people that were in that cast who have gone on to be extraordinarily successful. Heather Headley was in that cast, and
wow.
Jim Weitzer and Marnie Nicolella, a lot of people who have gone on to work pretty consistently. And I did the Summerfest stuff there as well. I did Carousel and Fiddler on the Roof, both directed by Dominic. And I did a lot of plays. I got to do Uncle Vanya there my senior year, and a production of Prelude to a Kiss with a good friend of mine. So,
so you always
sort of run the gamut.
So you always had interest in doing dramas and comedies, too, besides just doing musicals.
Oh, yes. Actually, the theater department, I didn't join the musical theater program until my junior year. You have an option to audition after your freshman year and after your sophomore year. And I auditioned after my sophomore year. So my first 2 years of the theater department were... I did musicals extracurricularly, but my study was specifically it was Shakespeare and the Greeks and Moliere and Chekhov and things like that. And then my junior year, I got to add in the classes about the history of musical theater and musical theater techniques, which was a delightful thing to add on. So
let me ask you the unfair question. I know you've done a lot of musicals, but I've seen you in some of the classic stuff. Which do you prefer?
You know, this sounds like maybe like a cop-out answer, but I really don't prefer either. It's one of the things that I love is that I have the opportunity to do both, because they're both challenging in their own way. Interestingly, you know, people ask me about my voice. Does your voice get tired doing all the musicals? My voice gets a much more tired when I'm doing a play.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I don't know if it's because I spent so much time training my voice as a singer, and not enough time training my voice as a speaker.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because it takes discipline and doing it right. And when you're talking and speaking and yelling, sometimes you're not thinking so much about, oh, I shouldn't really scream that so hard. I shouldn't shout that so hard. But when you're singing, you know, use your diaphragm, open your throat,
yeah, you
up
have
your jaw, all of those things.
So you have more of a technique. And then you get into the moment in a drama or a comedy, too. And you're not sure that you don't realize that you're screaming or whatever the role calls because you're just into the moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And one of the, you know, worst times that I've lost my voice was doing a play. So it was actually really, really odd. I all of a sudden found myself unable to speak.
Well, you've pretty well worked consistently since you've been out of school, right?
Give
us some of the shows you've been in, because I've seen you in many. Your Fanny Bryce was fabulous.
Oh, thank you, thank you. That was a really wonderful time. Fanny Bryce. My first professional show in town was Follies at the Drury Lane Oakbrook, in 1998, which was where I met my husband, which was delightful. And I got to play Patsy Cline and Always Patsy Cline.
Yeah, I remember that.
At the center, that was really fun.
I remember asking you. You went from Fanny Bryce to Patsy Cline almost back to back, and I remember asking you one time, how were you able to change style so much? And then you said, well, you're from Memphis.
Nashville. Yep. Yeah, and one of the first I got to see. Actually, one of the first performances of Always Patsy Cline at the Ryman Auditorium, so that was really exciting many years ago.
Yeah, that's a cute play.
Yeah, that was fun. And I did Travesties and Guys and Dolls and The Importance of Being Earnest at Court Theater, which were all fun.
Yeah, well, that Guys and Dolls was terrific, the version they did of that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we had a really good time doing that.
Well, then you got Wicked. Tell us about Wicked, how you got involved with Wicked.
Wicked was amazing. I was called for an audition when I was on vacation in Las Vegas, and I couldn't go, and it was, I think, for the tour, and I couldn't go, so I was disappointed, but I didn't really know the show, so I didn't know what to be disappointed about. I couldn't go.
Maybe that was good at the time, huh?
Yes, that was very good that I didn't know what I was not able to audition for. And then I got a phone call. We were in rehearsal for Travesties at the Court, and I got a phone call about an audition for this potential Chicago sit-down production. And I went in and thought I did a terrible job and called my agent. Was like, oh, I blew that. That was terrible. And he said, oh, well, I'm sorry. And then about 10 minutes later, he called and said, well, apparently you weren't terrible because they're flying you to New York on Monday to audition for Everybody.
Oh, that's so fast, huh?
The nice thing is it was very quick. I didn't have time to get nervous about any of this because I think I got the call about the audition. The audition was maybe 2 or 3 days later. I had the audition, I want to say, on a Friday. I flew to New York on Monday, and I got off the plane Monday afternoon, and I had the job.
Yeah, that's like a dream come. Then did you realize what you were into?
No. Yeah. I mean, I knew that I was about to start a Broadway production in Chicago. So I knew that it was going to be a great big production and that it was going to be a wonderful paycheck. And But I didn't really know the show yet, and I definitely didn't know the phenomenon that it is. I knew the story because I had read the book a long time ago, but no, I don't think anybody really knew what kind of a phenomenon that it was going to be. Everybody knew that in New York it is a huge hit, but even, you know, the production team, I think their first anticipation was that maybe it would run a year. You know, we'd get a good solid year run out of it, and 2.5 years later, it's still going strong. So
yeah, and it's going to keep going.
Yeah.
Eventually, somebody will write the book about the phenomena.
Because
Everyone's trying to figure it out. But so all right, so now tell us about the rehearsal process, because a lot of people wonder, how hard is it to go into a show that's already running versus, you know, creating a brand new show?
Well, it creates its own set of challenges. I mean, we had a long rehearsal process. We had 4 weeks in New York of 10 to 6 every day of rehearsal days. And the challenge is, and they were wonderful about this, the director and the choreographer, everybody. They were wonderful about wanting us to bring our own self and our own twist while keeping it within the confines of what the show already is. But they did encourage us to not be cookie cutters of what we had seen and what we had heard. However, the challenge is, but you have to stand here on this seam and on this number, because there's numbers at the foot of the stage that we can see that the audience can't see, so that we know where we are. And there's tracks where the furniture comes on and off, so it gives us markers where to stand. So it's, you know, the challenge is finding ways to make it your own while knowing organically you have to be here, you have to look here, you have to say this here.
And then what about the challenges of, well, first of all, your role, you're in a wheelchair.
Correct.
Which has got to have its own challenges.
You know what? At the beginning, it was a challenge, and now it's funny. There was the possibility of a wheelchair being in Little Women. We ultimately cut it, but there was a wheelchair sort of hanging around, and I can maneuver a wheelchair pretty well now. but yeah, that was actually a real challenge at the beginning, because, you know, when you're doing musicals, things have to fit within the confines of music. So as an ambulatory person, we know pretty much I have to go from A to B. I need to walk this quickly to get there. But how do I figure out exactly how long it's going to take me to wheel this gigantic wheelchair over there and stop and turn exactly when I'm supposed to? That became kind of difficult.
Yeah, so and tell us about the preparation. I know in Little Women you're doing 8 shows a week.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that has its you know, preparations, and the entrance and exits at Marriott, you're on the dead run. A lot of people don't realize how physical it is to do those shows in the round.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I forget each time I go back. It's funny, I've done, and I didn't mention in the list of shows, I've done 12 or 13 shows at the Marriott, and I just love working there. And I forget every time the challenge of the aisles, because they're raked, you know, they're ramps.
Sure.
To get on and off. Last night, actually, in our first preview, I was reminded in the most fabulous way how difficult it is, because I made a wrong exit, and it was the one. It was the exit that is the farthest from where I needed to be.
so now you're really
there
running.
There was a good full theater sprint last night during the show that if any of the audience had been paying attention, they would have seen my head sprinting around the entire length of the theater.
Wow, that's the hard way to get a workout.
Yes, exactly. And yet you don't realize it until about an hour later. So while it's happening, you don't feel tired. It's the hour after the show, you're like, ooh, what did I do?
So after doing that many shows, that Wicked wasn't that tough in terms of doing the 8 shows a week, because you were a veteran of doing it. I know a lot of shows do like 5 and 6 performances a week, and I'm sure 8 shows a week when you're doubling up is a real physical and mental challenge.
Yeah, it can be really hard. I mean, Little Women, I think, will be a challenge simply because it's a very demanding physical and vocal role. Nessa in Wicked, first of all, I don't have to walk.
Yeah.
And second of all, I don't really have to, I'm not on stage very much. I have a lot of time a lot of downtime. So doing eight shows of that was really not hard at all. The only challenge there is the schedule is the tiniest bit different. Instead of doing eight shows within 5 days, they do eight shows within 6 days. So you don't do two show days. You only do two shows twice a week, but you only have one day off. So that does present a bit of a challenge.
What do you do vocally? How I know a lot of people have problems, you know, keeping their voice up, not only the strain, but doing the two shows in one day.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I feel like I've been blessed. I have a relatively, I say this as I knock wood, I have a relatively strong instrument, but things like not talking so much, not drinking a lot of caffeine. I drink a ton of water. Just sort of, with me, it's just sort of common sense stuff. If it starts to feel tired, I stop doing whatever it is that's making it tired, or I drink more. Mostly, I just drink a lot of water.
Oh, so that's one of your formulas. I know some people that go sleep in between shows, and
oh, I can't do that.
No.
I'm not. I don't wake up very well, and when I nap, my voice tends to drop a little bit. It lowers, and it takes me a while for it to just warm up from the basement when I sleep.
Oh,
so
okay.
I can't really nap between shows, or I'm kind of doomed.
You've had a fabulous career, and it sure sounds like you're just having a good time.
I'm having a ball. I feel like just one of the luckiest people in the world. I get to do what I love. I get to live in the city that I love. I met a wonderful man and married him from doing what I love. I mean, I really can't complain.
Okay. I always ask this question of people. What do you see yourself doing 5 years from now?
Well, hopefully doing exactly what I'm doing right now. I really, my life is wonderful. And
are there any particular roles that you'd love to be cast in the future?
Oh, sure. There's a bunch. Unfortunately, a lot of them have been done around here recently, so I don't think they'll be done again anytime soon. But I'd love to play Dot in Sunday in the Park with George, and
mm-hmm.
Someday play Ava Perone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That show will be due in a year or two. You know, they cycle them every so many years.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully. Oh, gosh, My Fair Lady is one that I've always loved to do. But
I'd love to see you play Liza.
Well, I'd love to do it, but I'd hate to walk in the shadow of Kate Fry, because she was just brilliant in that.
And absolutely.
It would feel a little wrong to try to recreate that, but that's one that that's always been very special to me.
Okay, what about film? You have any interest?
You know,
in film?
I'd love to, but I don't. The LA lifestyle isn't one that I really want. I mean, I will always audition for things like that if they come along. I love live theater. Trust me, I would love to do a movie, but the idea of moving to LA and that grind of the auditions out there is not really my.
I've heard that, and the Chicago ethic of one show you're the star, and the next show you're the ensemble, because it's all about work.
Oh yeah, and it's fun. I mean, there's a camaraderie when you're in the ensemble that you don't necessarily have when you're playing a principal role, simply because you're on stage so much. You don't have the time to play with everybody off stage, and I miss that when I'm not. When I'm not in an ensemble, so it's a delight to get to go back and forth,
okay,
and do different things and take the pressure off yourself. And
yeah. All right, last question: what roles do you think you're the proudest of? I won't ask you your favorite, because that's unfair.
Right? No, that would be hard to answer.
Yeah.
The proudest. I'm very proud of Fanny Bryce. That I worked really hard with that, and it ended up being successful, and I was really quite proud of that. Travesties, playing Gwen in Travesties, I was really proud of that, because it was a challenge. It was very cerebral, and we did a lot of a lot of table work with that one. And
yeah, you guys were terrific. That was a great show, and that's one of my favorite plays. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun doing that. It was nice because it was a lot of my really good friends, and I made some really good friends. And it was an event. I mean, it was a 3-hour show, and you know, very complicated, and so that one I was really proud of that one as well. There's a bunch of them, but this Little Women right now is one of the most proud I've been of a show. I'm really, really proud of it. I think it's come together beautifully.
And I cannot wait to see it.
Oh, good.
I know it opens on Wednesday the 12th, and we will be there. It's such an underrated show, and it's so glad to see that you actually have the anchor of that show. You have the big role.
I do. I mean, the nice thing is it is an ensemble piece. Everyone is so integral to the story. But I do have to belt out a couple of biggies.
Yeah. Well, you'll have fun, and I have a feeling that it's going to be another major hit for you and for Marriott Theater.
Good. I sure hope so, because I know we're all really proud of it.
Well, that's half the battle. And with a cast like you have and with Marriott's, you know, excellent production values, I'm sure it'll be good. I just can't wait to see it. I want to thank you so much for the interview, for giving us the time. And
it was my pleasure.
Well, thank you. And remember, folks, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of December 10th, 2007. Steppenwolf Theater Company continues its 32nd season with the world premiere of Good Boys and True, directed by Pam McKinnon. The production, which includes a cast such as Martha Levy, Stephen Lewis Grush, Nick Horst, Mark Minton, Kelly O'Sullivan, and Kelly Simpkins, will start this December 12th in the Steppenwolf Downstairs Theater. The story is about Brandon Hardy, a privileged student whose life turns upside down after a scandalous videotape is found, and his mother must sort through the wreckage. This show is sure to be a hit, so remember, Good Boys and True opens this December 12th. Half-price tickets are available. For your chance to get some discounted tickets, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. The 19-day Broadway stagehand strike has finally come to an end. Steppenwolf's August Osage County missed its scheduled opening due to the strike, but has finally gotten its chance to open on the Great White Way. The opening date was last Tuesday, December 4th, 2 weeks to the day after they had intended to open. Steppenwolf has already announced a 3-week extension to make up for the lost time. The show will now run through March 9th. Audiences have reportedly been cringing, howling, and gasping at the antics of the Weston clan, which the story centers around. Critics have likened Osage to Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and A Long Day's Journey into Night in its popularity, and considers it a contender for the 2008 Pulitzer Prize for Drama. Congrats to Steppenwolf on surviving the strike. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before I let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from Coriolanus, Act 3, Scene 2. For in such business, action is eloquence. So, look what just happened. Another week of news done. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Heidi Kettenring for giving us the honor of interviewing her this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.